Are you ready for it? You can munch as we're going on. Did everyone get the summary?
Yes.
I brought extra if you didn't. You didn't get it. Carl, you didn't get it.
All right, I can have
your email.
Oh, was it? You
sent
it
out on email. I sent it on email. That's all right. Here, I'll go on for a bit.
Okay.
Well, as you've seen, this is terribly difficult to do. And I think if we just go back and very quickly review everything we've done in about 2 minutes, it'll help make sense of what we're doing and where we're going. That's why I passed out this little outline. Remember, we started out with the spirit of the times and the spirit of the depths. Then we had the murder of the hero, which meant that a lot of things were going to change. I'm making it very simple. And then we got into quite a few passages on spirit and matter. Elijah and Salome, the beautiful young girl and the old man. Jung went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for quite a few pages, and that duality was symbolized in a variety of figures I just mentioned too. Then we had the theme of death, which would mean that that conflict had played itself out and the ego was being prepared for a new orientation that would heal that dichotomy. And we got Izdubar. Izdubar was the hero who becomes human through loss. And he represents the synthesis of spirit and matter, meaning that desire and understanding are no longer seen as two antagonistic experiences.
Patty, I think we have one down here. Oh, just wondering if I could put it in the
middle. Yeah, there's the garbage bag. Then we pick up where we went to last week. The return of Izdubar opens up the issue of the transformation of God. Because Izdubar, Gilgamesh, would represent an image of the highest value. That's what a God image is, seen psychologically. So that brought in the idea, which then Jung would work on later in his life, the transformation of the God image. There's a problem. And the reason I put some things in red, I consider those steps in the dialogue as unresolved issues. And Izdubar says, I am the sun. Carl brought that up. Really, the new God image is a blending of sun and moon, masculine and feminine. But remember, we're dealing with a process of transformation, and we get the goal in several intermediary steps.
Now, could we think of it, you know how Neumann talked about each person sort of relives the whole history of our spiritual evolution.
Yes, you can.
So in this transformation, could we think to ourselves, okay, Jung, to do this, will have to relive the whole the whole series.
Right.
And he starts with Izdubar as son, and then
right.
So we could think of it that way.
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
That really helps me.
Yeah. And you can take that phylogenetically. Phylogenesis is the development of the race. Or you can take it ontogenetically, the development of the individual. Remember that phrase, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny? The development of the individual repeats the development of the race.
And that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
That's why Izdubar starts as the sun.
Right. Yeah. But it's a completed step, but it is not the end of the story. Now, the reason, I'll just put a parenthesis, the reason I put it in red, as I said, I think it's not finished, is what we're doing now and what we will be doing in the future is coming back to this issue and reworking it. So we get a intermediary stage of accomplishment, which we'll return to.
Now, what point are you making there, Gary?
That the material that we're looking at today and in the future is going to come back around and reexamine that state of achievement.
Are you saying there's some sort of reexamination that's going on that is somewhat outside of a natural process of
evolution? No, it will be following this process naturally.
Okay, all right.
This is not a final position. I am the sun. Self can't just be the sun.
It's just the beginning.
It's just the beginning. So he's gonna return to this issue and continue developing it in the subsequent weeks, subsequent chapters. I think this is how I've tried to make sense of all this chaos that's coming and why
and
it's so confusing.
That's
going
to be an ongoing. I mean, it's a constantly repeated cycle.
Yeah.
Development, reevaluation, development.
Right. And just like the conflict between spirit and matter led to Isdabar's sun nature is going to lead to another conflict and resolution. I think if you can put this in that perspective, it'll help the confusion. But it gets worse. The discussion that followed the transformation of God is this bit which we did. Now we're on to what we did last time. Ego and self in an interchange. The self increases, the ego decreases. The ego increases, the self decreases. That's what we did last time. Now comes where we are. As soon as he gets the self established, up comes the issue of evil. And I think it will help you if I'm right. We'll see if I'm right. I'm a couple of chapters ahead of you, not that many. But I think I can say this, although I may have to eat my words. Just as we had spirit and matter representing a conflict being resolved in Isdabar, we're getting in this discussion of evil a whole pile of contradictory statements, which will get resolved down the road. So we're not getting in this discussion of evil a firm position by any means. We're getting what the alchemists would call a massa confusa. It's just thoughts that are contradictory almost within each sentence. That's why it's so difficult to read.
It's like he's summarizing what happened within the church when the God was all light and how people confronted evil, what they thought about it, and what happened to them. It's like he's experiencing all that in
his
head.
Yeah. Well, that this is within the psyche. That a true encounter with the self brings with it the problem of evil. That's just the nature of the self. I just saw a dream 2 weeks ago of a fellow who was imprisoned by the Nazis. And he escaped. And he began to lead a completely superficial life in the dream. See, that Nazi imprisonment has a purpose. To keep him from leading a superficial life. Now that, which is his depression and his uncertainty and his feeling, burdened by life and so on. Now, there's very few things around less evil than the Nazis. Yet in the dream, those Nazis were playing a positive role. This is what you come up against. There is no resolution for that in our Western mind yet, but Jung is starting to work with it. And sometimes he's going to say evil is necessary, sometimes he's going to say evil is not necessary, sometimes he's going to say evil is kind of necessary, where before we had the conflict expressed between two clear figures, Salome and Elijah. Now the conflict is a layer deeper, and it's no longer the conflict between two clear entities. It's just a mess of ideas that don't hang together logically at all. That's why it's so frustrating now. What we have to do is just accept what we'll review, recognize and accept the various contradictory thoughts and feelings that come up in him around the problem of evil now, and for many chapters forward, he's going to then turn back and start trying to resolve that confusion. So the reason you feel confused probably now is the material is confusing. It's one utterance of the unconscious after the other, and those of you who did the Nietzsche work know when the unconscious is activated and speaking fully, it'll contradict itself in one sentence. It doesn't bother the unconscious a bit. That's what happens in insanity. People identify with that absolutely contradictory to and fro power of the unconsciousness, and what Jung is doing is letting it come up in him, not identifying with it, although it sounds like he is, but in the subsequent chapters he's going to turn back to it and start trying to distill a sensible view of evil and the self in subsequent chapters. So some of the things we talked about last time, that, by the way, the I and the double I mean column one and column two. He says, God suffers when man doesn't accept his darkness. And then he says, love and don't love evil. See, that's the unconscious. So what do I do? We should suffer from evil, and then God suffers. Well, that contradicts what he just said. And the reason we love and don't love evil is that we don't recognize evil. Well, that kind of makes sense. And it's like people who keep living the same destructive pattern in life again and again are somehow infatuated with the process of being destroyed. And then in the second column, he talks about the desire to spare ourselves our hell, which only prolongs God's suffering. Now, that does make sense. And that sparing ourselves hell is leading a harmless life. Remember the quote by Thoreau, don't be simply good, be good for something. Don't be good, simply be good for something. So that a life lived in the world is going to be brushing up against difficult, unsavory aspects of life. And then he talks that the self, the experience of the self, starts with black mud. So there he's saying that the black aspect of the self is prior to any attitude of ours, where before he just said the dark aspect of the self is because of our ignorance of darkness. Again, doesn't make sense, but they're all statements from the psyche that he's going to have to try to resolve.
And in a way, they're all true.
And in a way, they're all true from a certain aspect.
Yeah.
But what he will do then is try to create, I think, both a deeper and a broader point of view and bring in new elements of human experience which try to bring some reconciliation to all these, if not contradictory, certainly muddled statements.
And he does that by providing a perspective for each example, in a way.
Well,
he's
going to come up with one new way of looking at things that should reconcile
these. Encompass,
mm-hmm. Yeah. But I want to spend time on this because of all the weird things that are in this chapter that just sound contradictory. Well, they are contradictory. Is that wrong? No. That's the nature of the psyche. It would be harmful if he let it stay there, which is what crazy people do, but no, he's going to continue on and then turn back and look at the way these can be resolved, just like he turned back and looked at how to resolve the spirit and matter dilemma. Here, though, it's more confusing because it's muddled with the spirit and matter, yet two figures. Here you have five or six different points of view that collide.
And these are all views that have come out of the history, from the collective.
Yeah, you could say that. It's more, I think, what I would say is it is just the nature of the self. That it's our highest value, but it brings with it enormous moral complications, which Christianity has very conveniently chopped away.
In this context, I just wanted to get your... Are you using self and the collective unconscious interchangeably?
Well, the self being an aspect of the collective unconscious.
Because what I was thinking was that the collective unconscious would be contradictory and... in nature,
yeah.
But the self is the one that creates the whole. That
well, yes, the whole.
That resolves the conflict. So I don't
but it resolves it by containing both sides.
Right, whereas the collective unconscious is just giving him all these pieces. One opposite, that opposite, this piece, that piece. But the self, I thought, was the one that... I just wonder what you were... I was getting confused on that one.
Well, I think the problem is not recognizing the incredible paradox of the self.
But it is a uniting. It's the uniting symbol.
Often beyond our ability to comprehend it.
Right, okay.
That's, I think, the issue.
I mean, so in this context, you are using self and collective unconscious as interchangeable?
Yeah.
Okay.
What helped it make sense to me was when we talk theoretically about the self as a uniting symbol, like James says, that's all well and good, but when I'm going through the process of dealing with dreams, dealing with my life, dealing with analysis, it doesn't feel like there's any uniting symbol. It feels like this. It feels like... So that's what made this make sense to me, is because I feel like I'm right in the middle of this. Every day I'm like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So I think that's how it helps people look at it. That it makes more sense when you realize, oh gosh, this is the way it is. This is the way like this. It's just like one thing after another, and you're left reeling. You don't feel, and you know intellectually maybe that there's this uniting symbol, but
that's a good way. Maybe go back to James' question. If we see the self as uniting, good, but the way to get there often involves moral complications that offend us.
Right. I think it was just a matter of terminology for me. Which one is it?
For example, I like this guy, Elie Wiesel. He was in Auschwitz. He said the Nazis saved my life. Now, how do you figure that? Mm-hmm. He said, I was on a course of intellectual domination. Two of my friends committed suicide. They were studying, they had this rabid need in the Judaic mind to understand everything. And he said, two of my friends committed suicide. I would have been the third, trying to master Judaism intellectually. The Nazis came along and stopped that enterprise. I'm still alive. Even though they almost killed him. Even though they killed his sister and his mother. So it's these sorts of issues that you can't just say, oh, well, then the Nazis were good. But you also can't deny that what he said. Or in this little village I go to in France, I met somebody, I think I told some of you, there's these two beautiful little girls, well, not little anymore, but when I first met them, they were about 10. Their great-grandfather was a Nazi soldier occupying the village. He fell in love with their great-grandmother. After the war, came back, begged the village's forgiveness, which they granted him, married the great-grandmother. And now, because of the Nazi occupation, are these two beautiful girls in the village. Both are true. The war was horrible, and these are beautiful girls that came out of that awful occupation. So this is the sort of stuff that you have to deal with when it comes to the process of the birth of individuality. These awful moral contradictions.
I think the thing that I keep thinking about and helps me with that is Jung saying, you know, there's nothing so evil that good cannot come from, and there's nothing so good that it does not contain that chance for evil. And that's
a very good summary. But what we're going to see in some of this stuff, he almost goes over to the point of saying, well, evil's good. But see, that's the collective unconscious speaking. And then he's going to come out and say, whoa, wait a minute. Well, I'm sort of anticipating, but I'm just trying to give you an overview so that all the pieces, you have someplace to put all these contradictory pieces. He's going to be saying that, you know, you almost embrace your evil and so on. And then he's going to see in another chapter, my soul is possessed by the devil. Whoa! So this is what's going on. And just so you know, that it's a pre-stage, and it's the raw material that comes up around this process of understanding the road to the self. Which he's going to then come back and address. And answer to Job is in here. The dark side of the self is in here. All of these things that came out of his later work, I think, are being presented to him really for the first time in this material.
If we define evil as that doesn't support life, and say his anima is now working for what he defines as evil, doesn't support, it could be working for what doesn't support the old life. And the old values, what he's always valued, but is supporting something that you can't see yet. That's one way to make sense of it for myself, that it's supporting another way of life, but not the life that you are currently leading. Is that a possibility?
I think we have to have about 5 different definitions, and that certainly works.
Okay.
I think that definition is easier to swallow because it goes along with the Christian idea that evil is the absence of good. But I think that he comes to the conclusion later that there is just plain evil sometimes too. And so I think, because that was a piece of what he has taught that I just can't wrap my head around very well.
What's that?
The fact that there is evil that's just evil.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to justify how something, but I think that as we go through this book, I'm going to understand more. Because I think this is kind of makes sense to me because this is where I am. And I think that it's going to make less and less sense to me as I've gotten to that.
You mean you can't see how something, how just pure evil could exist? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think I have a really hard time. Intellectually, I get that, but I think that is so contrary to what I've always believed that I just can't grasp it when I'm dealing with my life. If that makes sense.
Yeah
sure.
It's hard to grasp what is pure evil.
It's very hard.
Or what is pure essence?
Yeah.
Somewhere in a footnote, doesn't he say that you have to be very careful in making that judgment?
Yes, for sure.
You know, it's you just don't know for a long, long time what is evil and what is good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even in something we just read for this, we just put about don't try and force people that what they're doing might be sacred.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point I'm speaking of, yes, exactly.
Okay, well, that's where we've been. And we will continue for quite a while just hearing all of these muddled to contradictory statements about evil. Realize that they are that, and that we just have to live with that nonsensical, non-logical linking of the ideas, and then we'll see him come back and start to try to sort that out.
Did anyone find all those statements on evil to sort of like make a line of sense?
What do you mean?
That they all flowed together and made sense.
Oh, here you mean?
Yeah.
I try, but I don't think they do fit together.
Oh, uh-oh.
It is really just psychotic mush.
Mm. To me, it seemed like all the thoughts one would have confronting the shadow.
It is, but I just don't. I didn't see any order.
You didn't see any order?
I didn't.
Mm.
Where did you stop here, Gary? On this page?
First paragraph, second column, 287.
Yes, but I mean on your notes here.
Oh, well, then I went on. What I did, just for my own sanity, I went on to see in the.
I'm sorry. I meant, but the last thing you talked about, I thought, was spirit hell.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so we didn't get into strength.
Puzzles. No,
okay.
Then we'll do that today.
Okay, okay.
And then what I did was I just put other places in the upcoming chapters where I think he's coming back and reevaluating what he's done here. That's why I gave you the outline. So all these further notations, I believe, are working through the confusion that we're being presented with here. So the danger is always we lose the forest for the trees. And I thought if you had a view of the forest, we might not feel so overwhelmed by the trees. So, you know, when you get sacrifice, it's the same thing as the death around spirit and matter. So as soon as he lays out the conflict, then comes a death where a new position is being prepared. And he goes to the imitation of Christ. Well, Christ is crucified between two opposites. The two madmen would be the confusion that's in this chapter. He's down in hell again, trying to hear a solution that is not just an ego fabrication. And then suddenly a tree starts growing. Well, there's the positive growth that's come out of this descent into an inquiry into evil, and so on.
Could we make similar statements about goodness, especially these areas that you have in red at the bottom of the page? That good is stronger than us and carries us away. I mean, I think we could substitute either
polarity. You sure could. Yeah.
But, of course, the problem from the Christian era is accepting the evil part.
Right.
Because we're stuck in the good.
Yeah. The red is where I thought there were contradictory statements. So look at that. Evil is stronger than us, carries us away. We'll get to that soon. But just while we're here. But we just heard that we cause God's evil by our lack of recognition of evil. That's a contradiction. How can something carry you away? There's no room for ego choice there. If evil is more stronger than us, what good is our decision? See how he contradicts? If you really think about what he's saying, which is what you have to do when you are assaulted by the unconscious, it doesn't make sense. But he's going to come back and make sense out of it. We fear evil, nothing can help us. So why talk about it then? if it can't be helped. Is it, if you really think, you realize these aren't full truths.
I guess we have to think of them more as stages of...
Stages or...
Of thought and processing. And
I think of the alchemist Massa Confusa. Mm-hmm. It's just a confused muck of various points of view, none of which are completely false, none of which are completely true.
All these statements seem to be something a person goes through, though.
Yes. But what we... An integrated personality then goes back and seeks to create a point of view that encompasses the pieces. That's what the alchemical process is. The alchemical process would now start, and what do we see? But a death, a descent, and a tree growing. That's straight out of alchemy. Dealing with all these fragmented statements. That's what the ego provides. How important the ego is to this experience. So a weak person would just get carried away, as Nietzsche, saying one thing one moment, one thing the next, until he goes crazy. I think that's why Jung said, you know, hadn't been for Nietzsche, I'd have been a goner. This is where he learned. I have to go back now and re-examine these thoughts. Nietzsche just published, after all the Master Confuser was written, Jung went back and re-examined everything he said and tried to find a bigger point of view.
I got the sense in when I was reading a couple of nights ago that a good deal of what he's, there is a kind of a central thesis here of in the material leading up to hell, that the evil is necessary to destroy the concretization of the God image.
Right.
And everything almost seems to hang in under that idea.
Until we get to him seeing his soul possessed by the devil.
Where's that?
Two 90, column 1.
Oh, 290. Okay. No, right. I'm not there yet.
So what you say, Carl, is absolutely true. But then, how do you not fall into evil? That's the problem. And you know, a Nazi could come along and say, "Well, Carl, that's exactly what we're doing. We are embracing evil to destroy a world which needs to be destroyed." Mm-hmm. And those Jews are part of it.
And every terrorist and revolutionary ever since
thinks that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what you say is true, it just needs a larger context. And he's just getting all those pieces, and then he's going to try to create a human framework that they can live in. How can we recognize the inevitability and even the healing capacity of evil and not turn evil?
You were suggesting we equate evil with resentment and repugnance and milder terms.
Yeah.
When we were talking about this before.
Right.
And I was using some of that in my thinking.
Yeah. He really does mean evil. I was just trying to make it more palatable.
Okay.
And yet he means those lesser things too, because in the one, it wasn't Elijah and Solomon, but when he goes to the professor's house and the daughter is, she's not evil, but she's all the things he doesn't like. He thinks she's kind of simple and she likes romances and she likes silly things. And all those silly things, they're not evil, but they're just not him. They're not things he likes or respects. Mm-hmm. And all that comes into play as well.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we can define evil, but what I would say is, can we have a working definition of what feels evil? And for some person, It might be telling off their parents. That is felt to be such a negative, antisocial, harmful thing that they would feel more guilt doing that than a Nazi would in exterminating a Jew. So we very quickly can get into a mental game of, well, what's evil? And I don't know, you know, as a working definition, I would say what destroys life. But there's that Nazi dream of that fellow who, in fact, was sexually abused as a kid. And I would see that Nazi as part of the brutality that he experienced as a kid, serving a positive role in his dream. This is what we come up against. So it destroys life, but at the moment, it's keeping him from living a false life.
That's what I was going to say. You have to define life and what's life.
Well,
living a false life.
I think that's easier, the fulfillment
well,
of you.
But I mean, you know, if you're going to say evil equals destroying life, you'd have to go redefine what you mean by life, too. Because
I would say the fulfillment of our gifts and potential.
And so leading a false life would be evil. Would be not life.
Yeah.
And it becomes
very, very quickly a mind twister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it helps to take it to that place, just for me anyway, where I can relate it to myself or, you know, something that I can hold on to, like things that I didn't used to think were evil at all, now I can look at them and say, you know, that really was evil. That was out of pride. That was out of, you know, all kinds of things that really are evil. They do destroy life. And often it was projected onto other people. But, you know, all the time, I was feeling virtuous about it.
That's the great thing about
it. Yeah, you know, that's where you get the high, or where I got the high. And so I think that, for me, it helps, you know, I could read about the Nazis and what happened, and I could be horrified and relate, you know, look at evil in that way. But that's not like taking it and saying, you know, how has it affected me in my life, and where have I experienced that? Because otherwise, I just keep it out there and say, well, that was them, you know. I would never do anything like that. Would in fact, I might, well, to protect my own self, you know, or to protect the people I love. I might do exactly what I'm told because I would be scared to do otherwise.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, I think that is actually one of the ways evil works. You know, the way these fascist states work, they don't say, if you don't go along with us, we're going to harm you. We're going to throw acid on your daughter's face someday. Then what would you do? That's exactly the way it works.
Yeah.
Or your son's been accepted to college, to medical school, and we have ways to make sure he doesn't get in. But I think the other point, your deeper point is that we realize what harm we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where evil resides.
In us, yeah.
And not to project it out there on other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you ready? I just wanted to give you a bigger picture so that all of this confusing stuff doesn't, so that the confusion of the confusing stuff doesn't discourage you. So man stands between emptiness and fullness. Second paragraph, 287, second column. I wonder if I can summarize that paragraph. He's discussing two cases: strength combining with fullness, and strength combining with weakness. Strength designing. I think I typed it up wrong. Strength combining with emptiness. I typed that wrong.
That's the first one, strength.
Strength plus fullness is formative. Strength plus emptiness is dissolving and destructive.
Okay.
You might say strength plus fullness is like the power of positive thinking. I'm doing well. I'm going to start another company, or I'm going to buy another house, or I have had one bestseller, I'm going to write a second. Quite a bit of our work goes along this line. But all that does, it makes you better at the error you are involved in. Put it a little less dramatically, all that does is make you better at your one-sidedness. Who's to say you're supposed to write a second book or a third book? Who's to say that you're supposed to have a second house? Who's to say you're supposed to have a second company? Who's to say you're supposed to get better at what you're doing? Maybe that what you're doing isn't really in doubt for you. So that success can merely confirm error.
So there you say so-called
success. Yeah, in collective estimation. And again, if you're working with a young person who can't get themselves out of bed to go to class, or a wife who's too depressed to function, that's the goal, just to get them successful in anybody's definition of the term. But the other route is accepting your emptiness and linking your strength to it, which makes the emptiness destructive. But it's a destructiveness you need because it destroys your false self. Why does he bring this up now? Because we're talking about evil and its cousin destructiveness. But he's trying to examine the situation where destructiveness is positive. Practically speaking, one person comes in to talk and they've had a bankruptcy, and you've got to say, oh my God, this is horrible, we've got to do everything possible to get you back on your feet. Another person comes in and says, I've had a bankruptcy, and you say, why did you need that? One fights against the collapse, the other supports the collapse. So that negative event, that destructive event, is taken as positive. I think American psychology, as a rule, judges everything about whether it leads to better functioning or not. We say, functioning as whom? And often these apparently negative, destructive events in life can represent a chance for a turn. So, some of the things he says there, human force turns emptiness into evil. You need evil. You are unable to live without evil. That's sort of where you were going, Carl. And I think you too, Carol. And I'm just giving you a couple examples where that is absolutely true. Yet, we can't make a leap and say Auschwitz was a good thing. Though Edie Wiesel could say, it saved my life.
And he does qualify it in this moment, he says.
Where is that?
The beginning of the next paragraph.
Yes. But as I said, in 291, we're going to see his anima is imprisoned by the devil. And he's going to say, wait a minute. How did that happen? And we should read the next paragraph. In this moment, see where we are. Does that make sense, what I said so far? That's that paragraph beginning, man stands. The formation would just mean the way things are. So, in this moment, you need evil. When you notice that your strength is coming to an end and desire sets in, you must withdraw from it what has been formed into your emptiness. Through this association with emptiness, you will succeed in dissolving the formation in you. Formation in you is the way you're adapted at the moment, the way you're coping at the moment, your life at the moment, what you have formed at the moment. And if you cannot be afraid of emptiness, you can feel how the existing life you're leading needs to change, so that the emptiness has destroyed the previous formation. Ergo, evil is good. Destructiveness is good. It might be more palatable almost to replace the word evil with destructiveness here.
I meant to ask what that serving in your life.
Yeah. I'm trying to bring it back to our ordinary experience. Mm-hmm. We're not philosophers. That, you know, if you have a car accident, you get ripped off. You make a bad investment. You get divorced. You get depressed. One approach might be, how can I get back to my strength? Other might be, well, this is meant to reorient me. What positive purpose is this serving? I just want to be careful with the word. Honestly, in all the years I worked, I think I've seen evil twice. Once indirectly in the dream of Victor the Russian. Some of you have heard us talk about that. The other, really, not too long ago, I was talking with a fellow who has dreams of kind of terrorist-like figures, and I suggested active imagination. And he came back and said, there's no way I can talk. And I kind of thought, well, you wussy. And that night, I had a dream of that terrorist. And I realized, there is no way a human being can talk. I don't know if I could explain what it was. It was a coldness and ruthlessness, absolutely unaccessible to human dialogue. No human caring whatsoever. And so that does exist, and that is what Jung is talking about here. Though most of the time, what we're dealing with are, you might say, avatars, or less severe forms of that. But so I'm just trying to bring this into our common experience a little more than just using the word evil all the time.
That's kind of the way Marie von Faust described it in, I think it was The Way of All Dreams, where she said, it's as if that person has no soul. She had met a criminal like that, who had no conscience. Or ability to step back. It's as if he has no soul. So she was trying to make the point that, yes, there is, she's calling it evil, but there are people who she can't reach, no one can reach,
mm-hmm.
It's as if they have no soul.
Yeah. I went back and I apologized to the fellow. I said, well, no wonder. Here's my dream. And the way I envisioned explaining it to him was, it's like Adolf Hitler is sitting here and you say, now, Adolf, let's have a reasonable talk about these concentration camps. let's just see if we can heart-to-heart reach a conclusion. You know, forget it. The thing you can do is kill him. Okay. Okay, you with me? It keeps getting a little heavier. Your shaping first produces an image of your formation within you. So that's like who you are.
You don't think he means by formation the formulation of the God image that he has just come up with?
No. It may be the formation of a God image which has hitherto been shaped and by which you're living. I think you could almost substitute for formation your old value system. But of course, that value system could have at one time been based on an experience of God. Well, you might be right.
Could we look at it as your activity, you're doing?
Your activity, you're doing what you're about, what you believe, what you stand for, what you say, what you do.
Could it be, Gary, even things that you maybe don't even see that you believe in? I'm thinking particularly of a man I know only, I've only met him a few times because he's a friend of my aunt Michael, and he was a very successful businessman in Chicago. Decided one day in a midlife crisis, he sold his business, he moved to the Keys, and he was just going to hang out. So he started playing music, and then he had that internal drive. His band has become successful, he's touring all over now. And so he wrote a song. He's right back in the same place he was with the business.
Yeah.
He has this powerful formation that creates a success that he is not something that he's wanting.
Yeah.
He can't get out of that.
Yeah.
That when I read this, I was like, he knows that.
Yeah. I think part of the problem with Izdebar, he comes back a little too close to the first formation, that sun bit. Jung really hasn't gotten out of Siegfried yet, completely.
Not until it was Gilgamesh.
Well, no, even with Gilgamesh or Izdebar, when Izdebar comes back as the sun, that's not a complete resolution of the power problem.
Except if we look at the images of what formed him in the egg, it's the balance. It's the sun and the moon. It's the dark and the light. So the possibility is that that can be brought out.
Yeah, it's closer than it was, mm-hmm. but it's still sun.
Right.
And we've got to get the sun and moon.
Okay. I was thinking Gilgamesh was the snake in the underworld.
It looks great until he's born again, and then he's the sun again.
So in the incubation period, in the pictures, you see the possibility, and then when it's born out and young has, however, transformed it back into what it was.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say what it was.
Somewhat.
There has been a growth, but it is not the synthesis of the sun and the moon. And he may not get to the synthesis of the sun and the moon until his heart attack. But he's a heck of a lot better than he was.
Depends on Greek.
Well, we started at... we didn't start till 1 o'clock.
Okay.
You tired? Yeah?
We've only done three paragraphs. Even the review was better.
We can take a break.
The review was not
too good. Okay, let's take a break.
Take a break.
All right. We've been talking for 55 minutes.
Okay.